From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. Next hour, Jordan Maxwell, our guest, investigative reporter, ancient mysteries, secret societies, the occult, and expert on astrotheology. Lots to talk with Jordan about next hour and for the rest of Coast to Coast. You might remember a couple weeks ago, I was starting to get fast blasts from people living in the Las Vegas area saying, something very weird going on here, George. Electronic car locks just aren't working. When we, you know, hit the button, open up our car locks, nothing happens. Something strange. Well, a story today that apparently a lot of locksmiths had been called on that day in February, February 21st. Hundreds of motorists had the same problem. Now it's reported of a possibility, and I'm going to put that in quotes, possibility, that maybe there might have been a military experiment underway to test for electronic circuitry and to knock out electronic circuitry. Nobody's confirming anything, but that's one of the suspicions out there in the Las Vegas area, that maybe there was some kind of military test that was responsible for all those malfunctions that occurred that day. In Colorado, by the way, a tsunami alert creates a wave of dry humor in an area called Gypsum, Colorado. Improbable, right? A tsunami warning sent out over radio stations there in Eagle County. What happened? Well, there was a mistake. The county warning system, somebody there hit the wrong button during its weekly test and accidentally broadcast the internationally fake emergency message of a tsunami. Now, if there's a tsunami in Colorado, we're all in trouble. But that's exactly what it said, and it told residents to head for the hills. They're already in the hills, though, so you can't get much higher than that. But it did not occur. It was a mistake. Officials at the University of California in Los Angeles, by the way, have acknowledged today that parts of bodies donated for medical research there had instead been sold, and they apologized for a failure in oversight. Donors' families, meanwhile, have filed a lawsuit against the school, claiming that the director of the university's willed body program had been selling body parts illegally for years with the knowledge of other UCLA officials. The UCLA University has denied knowing anything about the sales. The director, Henry Reed, has been arrested, along with another man accused of helping to sell the body parts. UCLA officials admitted that some body parts were indeed sold to companies, but said that they were only used for medical research, and they promised to revamp the cadaver program. About 175 people donate their bodies each year to the university for use in anatomy classes, according to officials. UCLA officials did not say when the body parts were sold or how many there might have been. In addition to Henry Reed, a fellow by the name of Ernest Nelson has been arrested for investigation of receiving stolen property. He claims that he acted as a middleman for 6 years, retrieving body parts from the medical school's freezer and selling them to research companies. He added that he collected the body parts by simply walking into the UCLA Medical Center twice a week with a saw and taking the parts. Over the years, he said, he cut up approximately 800 cadavers and sold parts to as many as 100 clients. Up on the Coast to Coast AM website under Hot Stories, a couple really strange stories. One about the amazing blue band found around Jupiter by an amateur astronomer from Spain. Take a look at that story, because there's this blue belt that seems to be growing across Jupiter, and they can't understand why. And also, there's a story called The X-Ray Image of Saturn. Richard C. Hoagland sent it to me. That's up on the website as well. They're puzzled at the results. And read that story. It's kind of technical, but you'll find that to be fascinating as well. Europe's Beagle 2 lander could have crashed into Mars because it was going too fast for its parachute. That according to scientists who met today to talk about what they think went wrong with it. Also, they heard talk about photographic evidence that four bright spots, dubbed the String of Pearls, might have been found on the surface of the planet. And they're trying to ascertain now if that indeed is where Beagle 2 might have crashed. And those four bright spots may indeed be the airbags. So they might have found the Beagle 2, after all. You know, during the evening of March 13th, 1997, thousands of Arizona residents witnessed a silent, mile-long V-shaped formation of lights slowly gliding overhead. The unexplained sightings developed headline news all over the place, catching the attention, of course, of Coast to Coast, USA Today, Extra, national morning television shows, the evening news with Tom Brokaw, Dan Rather. One person, however, was not surprised by the appearance of the lights. We're going to talk with her and with Dr. Sky in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky, is an astronomical journalist, lecturer. He's been involved in the science of astronomy for more than 30 years. Dr. Sky got his start in astronomy when he was 6 years old and living in the New York City area. During this period, he was a frequent visitor and student at the famous Hayden Planetarium. During high school and college, Steve was involved with producing his own radio shows on astronomy and space science. He was a regular on CNN during the early days of the network and has written many astronomy columns for newspapers, as well as a regular column in our very own After Dark newsletter. Hi, Dr. Sky. How are you? I'm doing fine. And let me introduce, if I can, an internationally acclaimed physician and health educator, Lynn Kitai, MD, is leading on the cutting-edge era of early disease detection and prevention as chief clinical consultant at the world-renowned Arizona Heart Institute's Imaging Prevention Wellness Center in Phoenix. She is also a key witness to the still very unexplained UFO mass sighting that took place throughout Arizona on March 13, 1997, called the Phoenix Lights. After 7 years of investigative work, Dr. Lynn is coming forward for the very first time with startling photographic evidence and personal anecdotes relating to the Phoenix Lights event and much more. Her scientific approach, combined with her own intriguing experiences along the way, makes for a very compelling and insightful reading. Dr. Lynn has indeed discovered that we are not alone. She will be our guest for the entire hour here on Coast to Coast. Dr. Lynn, how are you?
Hi, it's a joy to be with you.
Oh, my pleasure indeed. Steve, tell us a little bit about the events leading up to this, because you're going to be doing something very special this week in the Phoenix area.
We sure are, George, and I appreciate the opportunity to tell all of our Coast to Coast AM listeners about this event. And as we'll all hear, the wonderful story of Dr. Lynn and her new book, which, by the way, Dr. Lynn will tell us, will be officially released on the 13th. But we'll be doing an event, George, at the Vision Quest Bookstore, which simply is located in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I would encourage all the listeners of Coast to Coast AM to simply go to the Dr. Sky website, www.drsky.com. And one of the reasons, George, I could find and certainly believe there's no better person out there to illustrate to us, as we'll soon find out, this most wonderful story of the Phoenix Lights. And Dr. Lynn, of course, has put over 7 years of her time, taking time away from her professional career, just to analyze what, in her opinion, is one of the most amazing sightings ever in probably the world of these flying triangular-type craft.
Dr. Lynn, if you can tell us a little bit of what happened, because you were indeed a witness to some of those lights, but not a lot of people knew about you at that time in 1997, right?
Correct. Actually, my husband, who was also a physician, and myself had a very close sighting in 1995 to our home without any knowledge or interest at all in the topic. Suddenly, we noticed these three amber orbs in a triangle formation, actually a pyramid formation, one on top and two closely aligned underneath, very near the home. And I did get pictures of it and wondered for 2 years what the heck we saw, what this strange advanced technology, it seemed, was all about. Again, never even knowing who to ask about it. And again, in 1997, January of 97, 2 months before the mass sighting, these amber orbs and I call them orbs because the light did not extend outside of the edge. It's very intriguing to read in my writing as I kept a journal of exactly what occurred. Quite intriguing. And anyway, these amber orbs started showing up at a distance, and I started documenting them as well. They were so extraordinary on video and on 35 millimeter. And actually, the second night that they came back, there was a massive span of these orbs, over a mile wide. We could tell by the landscaping because we're high up on the mountain and we have a panoramic view of the city skyline, so we enjoy the lights out there and are quite familiar with plane lights and helicopter lights and street lights and so forth. These are quite different, and I happened to catch six pictures in a row of this object, this unexplained phenomena, head-on turning into a V-shape. Which was 2 months before the mass sighting, and it was so unnerving. I started making calls the next morning to find out what it was, and found air traffic controllers at the Sky Harbor International Airport who saw the same thing. They had looked, it did not show up on radar. They looked with binoculars, and in their words, witnessed six points of light equidistant from each other, perfect synchrony, moving slowly behind South Mountain. You know, again, this was very intriguing. They had no idea what it was, and I saw it kept continued documenting these lights on video, and on March 13th actually caught three lights over the city. There was the same formation in the same location that appeared about 10 o'clock, and by the time I got out there with my camera, three had disappeared, and I got the three that were left that looked like a kind of a huge triangle over the city, and didn't even know until the next morning when I happened to walk into a MUFON field investigator's home to find out what these lights were that I was documenting, that there was indeed a mass sighting the night before. And from there I started keeping a journal and started looking for a logical explanation for what I witnessed and photographed.
It's hard to believe it's been almost 7 years, Lynn, since this mm-hmm. occurred. And since that time, we have gotten all kinds of reports from all over the country of large triangular-shaped objects being found, spotted at night, sort of similar to what you saw. Very quiet, lights at the edges on each tip as in a triangular shape. A number of police officers, for example, near Millstadt, Illinois, not far across the Mississippi River from St. Louis, Missouri, witnessed seeing an object years ago as well. It seems to be pretty similar, but these, even though these reports are of a huge object, they're not nearly as large as what you saw and what thousands of other Arizona residents saw in 1997.
Well, interestingly, and it's a very good point, this is actually has been happening worldwide. It is documented quite extensively in Russian. In fact, a month before the mass sighting, I didn't know this until I started really delving into what might be going on. Did I even find out a week after the mass sighting that this was happening worldwide, and then almost a year later discovered that the same similar phenomena had appeared in St. Petersburg, Russia, February the 19th, a month before our sighting, and several people captured video of the objects, of the unexplained objects, and that are identical to what I captured in January of 97 on 35 millimeter. Again, this has been happening worldwide, Belgium, as well as in New York, Hudson Valley. A number of these sightings have been happening. And what's interesting, most interesting to me about the mass sighting is that not only did people see what I had been seeing for so long, but and certainly confirmed for me that something was going on that was unusual, but on March 13th, 1997, thousands of people were outside looking up at the sky at the Hale-Bopp comet on a very clear night. These phenomena passed through the most populated corridor of Arizona for a two-hour period, from upstate Arizona down to Tucson and then back to Phoenix. And, you know, it just seems that whoever did this wanted to be seen.
Absolutely. Steve, tell me, on that day in 1997, were you in the Phoenix area at that time?
I sure was, but it's embarrassing. But truth is always the best remedy here. But, you know, I did not see this event. And friends of mine who were saying to me, they called me about an hour later saying, gee, did you see the object in the sky? And I said incredulously, no, I did not. But what's amazing about this, George, is very credible people, including good friends of both Dr. Lin and myself, have seen this. I mean, there's a gentleman named Trigg Johnston, who is a professional airline pilot, among other people that have seen this object or did see it, and their descriptions are amazing. And as Dr. Lin was saying, an object that's easily a mile in diameter, silently moving across the people here. And as I understand it, George, all along I-10 and I-17, this object was first sighted, the first object we're talking about, on the evening of March the 13th, 1997, just south of Las Vegas. And it appeared to be, an amazing object that was incredibly big in size, stopping traffic. People were just dumbfounded. And even to this day, of course, we do not know what the origin of this object is. And it's great to have somebody like Dr. Lin giving us her, you know, painstaking work here for over 7 years in analyzing this whole thing, because she's seen these objects even before the March 13th event.
Steve, in terms of this object on the 13th, how long was it visible?
The object, according to good eyewitness reports here from, like I said, airline pilots to people like ourselves, was that the object moved across the Phoenix skies and probably was visible for easily about 5 to 6 minutes in total duration, and probably longer. The first sightings in the Phoenix area came out of the northwestern part of the sky. The objects literally sailed across the sky. Some descriptions of ground motion were maybe 30 to 40 miles per hour. That's unconventional. You'd think some type of a blimp or some kind of a lighter-than-air craft. But no noise. And the object then sailed to the southeast here in Chandler, where I live, and then south over toward Tucson, and that's when it was lost from visual sighting.
I know you, being the astronomer, hate to speculate, Steve, but what do you think it was?
Well, George, I've gone over this a long time, and my simple answer, at least a long time ago, was that this is probably, again, some type of a military project. But I've kind of had a rethinking of all that, because as much as I've investigated on the website, of course, drsky.com, people can formulate their own opinions, there still seems to be a most incredible part of this that nobody can seemingly answer. What the heck was the object that we're talking about that, by many good eyewitnesses, was about a mile in diameter? And we know, I mean, I don't even think the military is obviously coming clean on the subject, but it even seems to be incredibly big. I mean, here's an object of 1 mile in diameter. It's almost as long as some landing fields, and yet here's the object.
Actually, some witnesses said it was 2 miles wide, that it went across both lanes of the highway and spread to the other sides. And the other thing, just to add to that, Dr. Sky, is that when you look at the data, when you really look at the photographic evidence, and certainly that's given me the strength to come forward, it speaks for itself. The footage and the pictures that I took before and after, by the way, because it has occurred several times subsequently to the March 13 event for myself, are quite compelling, and the fact that it's happening worldwide and other countries are much more open to it as unexplained and unearthly, including China, that has an elitist group of scientists studying it, and Belgium, who actually came to the United States and said, "Are you doing this?" And the United States flatly said no, as well as Russia has been studying it for 20 years. Many, many countries have been studying this, and what I tried to do in the book, The Phoenix Lights, because all along, I must say, George, that I think Dr. Sky will agree with me because he has read the book, is that I just was looking for a logical explanation. I started out as a healthy skeptic. I wanted to find out what this was, what I saw, what I documented, and the more I looked, the more I found that this is unexplained.
All right, you stay with us. Stay with us, Lynn, because I want to come back with you at the halfway point, and also open up the phone lines to anybody, those of you who live in the Phoenix area, specifically others who may have seen similar objects like this around the country. But, Steve, before we say goodnight to you, tell us a little bit more about the event that you will be hosting this week.
Yes, and proudly with Dr. Lynn, Vision Quest Metaphysical Bookstore. They're located at simply 2225 North Scottsdale Road. That's in Scottsdale, Arizona. You can call them at 480-949-1888. All that available for more information on drsky.com. And I should mention that we'll have a lot of prizes to give away to people. Now, this may sound a little different. Some of the major telescope companies, Meade Instrument Corporation, donating a telescope so people can be better watchers of the skies.
Huh.
The good folks at Starry Night, who do this wonderful software package, many, many different levels of Starry Night Pro, will be given away, including a number of copies of Dr. Lin's wonderful book, And, George, we've even gone a step further down the line. We've even got pastries for all of our guests and coffee.
Yeah, made like aliens, right?
You bet. No, in the shape of the triangular shape object.
Okay, Steve, thanks, and good luck to you.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Dr. Kitai, you stay with us. I'll be back with you in just a moment, and we'll open up the phone lines as well. We'll hopefully try to get to the bottom of this, or at least somewhere into that. I'll be back in a moment.
Subscribe to the After Dark newsletter online at www.coasttocoastam.com. Just click through the orange type to the secure server. Call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
It's my guest this hour is Dr. Lynn Kitai, her book, The Phoenix Lights, and that's exactly what we're talking about, and we'll take your calls this hour as well. Next hour, my guest, Jordan Maxwell, investigative reporter, author. He is an expert on a number of issues, specifically ancient religions, secret societies, real-life mysteries. We'll be talking with Jordan about a lot of things in just a few moments here on Coast to Coast. A few more weeks to go, and then the free CD offer, the free CD Art Bell's interview with the late Father Malachi Martin on exorcisms will be finished. That edition will be gone, will not be reproduced. You can get the free CD and an After Dark newsletter subscription by calling 1-888-727-5505. Operators are there 24 hours a day, 1-888-727-5505. You can also order it safe and secure at coasttocoastam.com. And again, once this CD program runs for this issue, this one will be gone, will not be reproduced again. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with my guest this hour, Dr. Lynn Kitai. She has written a book. She's come forward now. She's written a book called The Phoenix Lights and is now talking about that, and also is revealing some incredible photos that she has taken, a thumbnail sketch of that available on her website, thephoenixlights.net, which, again, you can get to from drsky.com or coasttocoastam.com. Lynn, about a year ago, a very close source of mine told me that he had reason to believe that this large triangular object that most people are witnessing in this country, and not the Phoenix Lights now. He was specific about that, that what they are seeing is some kind of military craft. He went on to say that it is a cargo type of vehicle with a different kind of propulsion system. It's huge. But what he did not say was whether it was reverse engineered or not. And by that I mean, of course, was it alien technology that we got somehow and then built this craft? But that's what he believes some of these other objects are around the country.
And there may be some, but I know that's not what we saw. I mean, as far as, you know, I have taken such great lengths to find a logical explanation for this. You know, as far as the Phoenix Lights event itself, the military was more interested in looking at my evidence and giving an explanation for it. And it's just too compelling. I really did the homework for not only for myself to find out what was going on, but for others to read. I had a 770-page journal when I finished my journal 4 years after the Phoenix Lights, just compiling the data that is out there that is so compelling, and quotes from presidents and astronauts and military and pilots. There is so much data out there if you really look for it, and I compiled it all so that people can just read the book and see what I've discovered along the way. And it's not just about these unexplained phenomena, these unexplained aerial phenomena. What I found out that was most intriguing is that when I did talk to the witnesses who, again, were very credible and had wonderful stories to tell themselves of what happened to them on March 13th, which I also share in the book, but other things started coming to the fore. I not only was my own near-death experience reawakened right before the Phoenix Lights reappeared in 1997, but as I spoke to other witnesses, they shared that their near-death experiences were reawakened as well, and I found that very curious and thought, geez, is there a connection here? And it sent me on a new road where I started really looking to the possibility of the connection between all unexplained phenomena, considering the unexplained aerial phenomena as well as near-death experience, mystical light experiences, vivid dreams, and so forth, experiences that also had some sort of light connected with it. And lo and behold, I did find a connection not only in the experiences themselves, but most poignant was in the positive transformation that took place within the person that experienced these things, really experienced these things openly, with an open mind. And actually coined a new phrase in the book, an acronym for unexplained phenomena called an UP, because certainly we look up in the sky for unexplained aerial, but the enlightenment and the awakening that happens within a person that not only experiences but is open to it. You don't need to experience an unexplained phenomena to have that positive transformation, a connectedness to the universe, to each other, and certainly to our Earth. There is a very profound and important message that takes place within the experiencer that I share as well, and is one of the main reasons I'm coming forward, because it's important to get that message.
Do you believe these lights were attached to something physical or something else?
You know, there's two trains of thought. From the analysis that was done here locally by Jim Dellatoso, and again, I took great lengths, and honestly, I just got my pictures out there, the video of the March 13th event, so that people could see what we saw. That's what's important, not myself. But in the background, I did go to great lengths, not only to have Jim Dellatoso, who is world-renowned and has a database of over 200 of these amber orbs and triangle formations from all over the world, but to the Brooks Institute of Photography, the University of Arizona Optical Sciences Department, and Consciousness Studies Department, as well as ASU Mathematics Department, and on, Dr. Bruce Maccabee in Washington, D.C., Navy optical physicist, for them to explain it to me and to analyze what I had. And I have to say that and in the descriptions of witnesses as well, and like the air traffic controllers the morning after that massive sighting 2 months before the March 13th, some people saw just the lights.
Just the lights.
And felt that they were attached to something, but they couldn't see what it was attached to. And there might, you know, as Jim Dellatoso postulated, there may be a field in between these lights.
Mm-hmm.
Other people actually saw a craft. And some people were right under it. I mean, they're traveling up I-10 towards Phoenix for a swim meet.
Could they see detail?
They did. They saw actually like gunmetal underneath.
Oh, my gosh.
The descriptions are just astounding from all people, from all walks of life, and children as well.
Okay, let's go to the phones. They're lining up for you. First-time caller line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with Dr. Lynn Kitai. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hi.
First, I want to tell you, George, love it. First time I've called you, but I've been listening to you.
That's okay. That's okay. Go ahead. Thank you.
We were traveling down I-10, me and an ex of mine, and we had come back from Phoenix. We were headed back to Tempe, where we lived. And we saw the lights as well. And we always thought that, you know, being that a whole lot of people just blew it off as, you know, nothing, and there were a few people that actually came out and said that they saw these, a lot of us, we have discussion groups in our chat rooms locally and talk about this. Since then, anymore, most of the people don't do it anymore. My question to you is, have you ever talked with anybody locally along Tempe, Mesa, anything like that, in discussion groups, whether it be in person on the Internet, and has any of these people ever brought forth pictures or brought back any other evidence that you haven't had?
Actually, as far as I know, and that's a really good question, there were four or five videos that came forward, one from underneath from the earlier event, which was very really wasn't very clear. The four videos at 10 o'clock, which interestingly enough, were taken from different vantage points, north, south, east, and west, are very compelling. In fact, if you get on my website, I have... After years of asking for some kind of investigation or explanation, the only thing that came out 5 months after the fact was that there were flares sent off by the Maryland Air National Guard. And we said, fine, I mean, if that's the case, then reenact it. Well, no one knew that I had pictures 2 months before of the same formation in the same location, and I was waiting to see. If somebody can do it, and the Maryland Air National Guard was not in town during that time, by the way. But I was open to any logical explanation, as were, you know, the group that was intimately investigating this, and that was never done. And a week or so before the third anniversary, these flares were sent off, and it was just so dramatically different than what we had seen and photographed the night of March 13th that I did come forward, and that was the first time that I come forward, because it was just so frustrating for everyone, including myself, that there just wasn't any, everything was blown off, just like you said. I mean, we were just blown off in denial, and nothing happened, and whatever. This was said all along the way by government and military, except for Councilwoman Frances Barwood. She was the only governmental person that came forward and even, you know, inquired about what happened, because
sure,
so much of her constituents did. But anyway, there are no other pictures. There are no other 35-millimeter pictures that anyone has come forward with. And what's been said to me by experts all along the line is how unique this is, that from the same vantage point I have documented photographs prior to March 13th and after March 13th that confirm that these are real.
Let's go to our wild card line now. Welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hello there. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been wanting to talk to somebody about this for a while and didn't really know which way to turn. Basically, the only people that know about it is my family, but I am a truck driver, and this happened in 1996. I was running northbound on Highway 93 north of Kingman, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very long straight stretch, and I could see headlights of two vehicles coming towards me, approximately a mile ahead of me. All of a sudden, the cap of my truck just kind of illuminated in kind of a neon blue, and it kept getting brighter and brighter, and I could not figure out where this... I was looking around for the light to find out where it was coming from. And just all of a sudden, a huge neon blue ball of energy, huge ball, went past my truck at an extremely fast rate of speed, and it just kind of UE'd up into the air, into the sky. When it went up to the clouds, which I really wasn't aware that it was overcast at the time, but as it entered up into the cloud area, the whole sky illuminated in a neon blue color, and you could see the outline of all the clouds for miles. Could this be associated with what went on in Phoenix? You're asking me?
Well, Lynn, I'm not sure, because that's a totally different report than what I think we heard in Phoenix.
Absolutely, that is different. What is important about what you're sharing is that it's about time that we get these unexplained phenomena experiences out in the open and not feel anxious or afraid to share, because something is going on. Certainly, many things can be explained by natural or earthly reasonings, but there is a case for, just because we can't definitively define these things doesn't mean that they're not real. We may be, you know, looking on the AM dial for an FM frequency. We just haven't found the right equipment yet, even though our technology is as advanced. Until the microscope was discovered, we didn't know there were zillions of microorganisms all around us, even in our bodies. And even the just recently we discovered that every cell has magnetic energy, and helped us discover and develop the MRI, the magnetic resonance imaging equipment to detect disease non-invasively. Just because we can't define these things doesn't mean that they don't exist and they're not real.
Lynn,
it's time to really address it and to find out what these things are.
Were military jets scrambled during the sightings of these lights at all?
That's what we're told. Peter Davenport, the director of the UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, in fact, he is on my website in the video that I did. I did two interviews, as I was sharing before, one for Fox and one for MSNBC, so people could see what we saw in the comparison to the flares, et cetera. He is in the Fox report on my site, www.thephoenixlights.net. And shares many, many descriptions and pictures from witnesses. He also supposedly had a call from a crewman from Luke Air Force Base that he taped, and it sounds very credible, that this mile-long triangle craft actually traversed right over 7th Avenue and Indian School on its way toward the airport.
Stunning.
And the air jets were scrambled, and the pilot was really shaken up.
I would guess so.
When they got close, it just disappeared.
West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, is that me?
It is you. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. My good friend John lives up on Glade Park here, and this is in Grand Junction. Went down to Moab, which is about 103 miles from here, to look at an arch. He walked up to this arch, and he had a brand new digital camera that he was trying out for the first time. And he's interested in arches, and he was right there by this arch, and he said he felt real weird. And he got sick, and he said he might be dehydrated, so he got some water. And then he took some pictures of this arch, and then got back from it on plumb down the rocks and took some more pictures. And when he got home and had his computer develop these pictures, here was a beam of light coming right down from the sky to this arch in one of the pictures. And then here's this cylinder, metallic gunmetal colored cylinder up there. And he's got a couple of wonderful pictures of that. He gave me one of them. And I don't know. He said he sent some in to your website. I don't know. That's what he was telling me.
Tim Edwards, by any chance?
Pardon?
Was this Tim Edwards, by any chance? Because in Colorado, Tim Edwards shot a cylinder-shaped vehicle that was hovering in the sky for some time. And I must say, I do also have some pictures that I took of my collect sunsets, and I have some of that as well.
Lynn, I would like to get you back for a full program, because I don't think 1 hour is going to do this justice. Would
well,
you do
I'd
that?
I'd love to.
Okay, we will do that. I've only got a couple more minutes left, and I just think this is just so important. And your pictures are just absolutely stunning. I think we need to do a full program on that. So we'll make sure that our producer, Lisa, gets back to you, and we'll get you scheduled for that.
Thank you. I would love that.
This, no doubt, is a very perplexing episode. And what I find to be so fascinating about all of this is the fact that this occurred in a major metropolitan area in this country with minimal military announcement of what this might have been. It's almost like a nonchalant, we don't care attitude with this excuse of flares might have been sent up, and then they've just left it as that, almost a slap in the face of so many people who have witnessed something very strange.
I have to tell you, that's exactly true. So many people were so frustrated, including myself, because there just wasn't anything happening for months and months and months. And then finally, June 18th, the USA Today came out with a beautiful article, a huge article that opened it up to international scrutiny, and we were deluged by reporters from all over, media from all over the world, asking, why isn't there an investigation? Why isn't there an explanation? And shortly thereafter, this flare explanation came out.
Well,
and they might have been sent off as well, because supposedly the military was aware of what was going on for days before. Certainly, sending off flares would have been appropriate for them to do.
Well, they weren't too excited about it. So either they know it was military or they know it was extraterrestrial, but regardless, they probably already knew what it was.
Well, my big question is, why would they, if it was military, and again, Belgium came to the United States and asked if they were doing the same thing there in the early 90s, and the United States denied that it was, why would they do it on a night when thousands of people were outside looking up at the sky at the Hale-Bopp comet? That concerns me as well.
I know it. Strange indeed. Lynn, we will do this. We'll get you back for a full program, and appreciate it. And good luck on the anniversary date of the Phoenix Lights, seven years ago, March 13th.
Thank you so much. And we want to remind everybody that on Vision Quest Bookstore in Scottsdale, 7 p.m. Actually, I'll get there a little bit early. We're giving some advanced signed copies out at that time, and we'd love to have people join us. I'm going to be showing some of my video as well.
Okay, thanks, Lynn.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Lynn Kitai. Dr. Lynn Kitai. She has stayed silent for all these years, and do get up to her website. You take a look at the pictures, and you make up your own mind. I'm George Norrie. I'll be back in a moment with our guest, Jordan Maxwell, right here on Coast to Coast AM.
Reserve your free CD of Art Bell and Malachi Martin when you subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505.